What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode one of the Chiefs Collective. I'm Cole with How About Those Chiefs, HBTC, Chiefs fan, born and raised in KC, and somehow I'm in a podcast here with Nate Taylor of ESPN, credentialed reporter for the Chiefs, been doing great work for years. And then obviously Mitchell Schwartz, former right tackle, Super Bowl champion, all pro of the Kansas City Chiefs, predominantly on the tail end of your career. And I'm honored to be here, man. Nate, how are you feeling?
I feel great. We should, in future introductions, say perhaps Chiefs Ring of Honor? Question mark? Who knows? Start the campaign now? You know, I don't know. Is there a better right tackle in Kansas City Chiefs history? Question mark? You know?
Have people? I don't think I'm allowed to answer that.
Oh, come on!
Yes, I'm the absolute best, and it's a travesty that I'm not in there already.
Exactly. Well, you have to wait a few years, and you know, I mean, it is like wild. You have to wait a while.
I was theoretically Hall of Fame eligible this year, but you know, I didn't quite get any of those letters in the mail.
Well, we got to start somewhere. We're going to start with the Ring of Honor before they put that new stadium up. I need to see your name, Mitchell. That's please. The way that works. Ooh,
would you rather be the last inductee in Arrowhead or the first inductee in the new one?
Great point.
First in the new. I don't know.
I don't know. It would be great to be like, I'm shutting down Arrowhead. It was my name that came up, and then everything was
If the renderings are to be believed, I think the new one doesn't have numbers, right? They just had the names on there.
Yeah.
So you'd probably want to at least get that 1 year in Arrowhead to have your number on there.
That would be, and again, with everybody who's already up there now. So, yeah, that would be a really cool point to be like, yeah, I hope they keep the numbers for, I know it's just renderings to the new stadium in 2031, but my hope is that, you know, in terms of like connecting those traditions that, yeah, I mean, I know what number Derek Thomas wore, but like, let's keep that tradition would be my opinion that no one's asking for. So, yeah.
Nate, two questions for you. A post on Chiefs Facebook went viral, very accurate source for news, a couple weeks ago. It said you were coming out of retirement. So can you address the rumors? Are you coming out of retirement? Can you break some news for us here?
I can break some news for you. I'm not coming out of retirement. I've long said I will gladly, this is when Juwan was on the team, but I would gladly take Juwan's paycheck. I'll give you two, maybe three plays. You know, I could probably give you the backside of power. I can give you maybe one pass play. Pat might get hit, he might not. And then that first run play where I got to like go into the guy and unload the hips, I think the back's breaking in half. So I can give you two, maybe three plays depending on the sequencing. But no, that I love the paycheck. I mean, people always ask, what do you miss? It's like the locker room, Super Bowl wins, rings, and paychecks. Cause you know, you don't just luck your way into that kind of money outside of football. It turns out
it's hard for me to believe that Von Miller isn't on that list, Mitch. I mean, come on. Don't you want to see Von Miller again? I mean, maybe, I don't know, Nick Bonito, you want to update the model?
You know, I am very glad I don't have to see those guys. I'm sure we'll get into them later in the season. But the way they go about things would make life very difficult for me because I was someone that kind of like needed – I mean, all the Chiefs fans are not the most fond of Juwan and the penalties. But the idea of using the snap count, getting off the ball, getting back to your spot, like that's something that those guys excel at. They're probably the best in the NFL at getting off the ball, at least as a pair. I don't know if they have some sort of read on teams, but yeah, I'm not sure I would have done that great against them because they actually do like the one thing that I just, you know, I'm not the quickest guy. So if they beat me off the ball, I'm basically completely screwed. So yeah, I'm very happy at home. I turned my basement down to 65 degrees before this just to make sure I was, you know, got that extra little layer and, you know, carry some extra insulation these days. So yeah, pretty stoked to wake up every morning in my own room with my own air conditioning and not be in St. Joe.
I was just about to say, Cole, there were years, Cole, where I would know that players loathed being like, okay, it's the end of the day. It's a lot of hard work. My body's a wreck. I'm not going to sleep in my own bed. And it's not cold enough in here, especially for like linemen.
Oh, no.
Linebackers.
It's number two on the left there, Mitch's camp stories. I was going to lead with it.
Okay.
We can We'll tease it out. We'll wait till we get to the Cam stories, but you, I'm just going to say you're not speaking the truth right there, and I'll tell you why.
Maybe I have it backwards in my mind, and I apologize. I think I do now. Now that it's coming back to me, yes. But
coming back.
Yeah. Oh, I'll share it. Don't worry.
Now, Cole, before we release this, I'm going to give a shout out, and neither one of these gentlemen know what's about to happen next, but I'm going to shout out The Art of Sports. It's a local sports card shop in, I guess, Leawood. Leawood's the technical address, but Overland Park, wherever. I love taking my 10-year-old son, Hayden, there, who's an avid sports card collector. And I was flipping through it, you know, flipping through all the cards. Like, they go by team, by league, sport. You know, I was just like, you know what? Why don't I sit down? This was like maybe less than 2 months ago. This was during the World Cup. So, yeah, it was about a month ago. It was during the World Cup, and I was just flipping through. I was like, you know what? Let's see how much money he's going to hassle me out of this, and you know, I'll take a guess. I'll finally sit down at the Chiefs section, which is the larger section, as you can imagine, based on where we live. And I found a number.
Please be Mitch for
Panini Instant Classic Super Bowl trading card.
Oh.
Look at that.
Come on.
I mean, it's crispy. I mean,
did you send it in? Is it at least an 8.5? Oh, don't touch the edges.
I know. Now you sound like my son.
It should be double sealed, up, man.
Well, I had to take it out to make sure people saw its true glory. I mean, that's what the 49ers had to face.
Three-point stance, baby. We're bringing it back through this
year. Couldn't get through that. You see what that says? Super Bowl champion.
LIV
and Patrick Mahomes' right foot.
Yeah. No, I think that maybe Damien's right foot.
Yeah, you're right. It's Damien's. Man, you got good eyesight, and I'm terrible at this.
You know, I know my teammates. You know, I'm a team guy.
Team player.
That is pretty cool. I will say, I've obviously seen that card before. I've signed a few of them. It's pretty cool. I really like the color scheme of that Super Bowl.
It was
kind of cool because, I mean, everything is like red, you know, that I have. Yep. And I came from Cal, which was blue and yellow, and you could not wear red because Stanford wore red. So coming here was like pretty cool to, you know, have license to finally wear red in my life. so, yeah, getting some teal and some cool aqua colors, that's been pretty fun.
Now, I got a super quick story about Super Bowl LIV. My wife was 9 months pregnant when the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl, when you guys were in the Super Bowl. And we decided before the season even started, we're going to name my second daughter Olivia. We're going to just nickname her Liv, L-I-V. But I had no idea the Chiefs would obviously make it to Super Bowl L-I-V and win it. And then right after the parade, wife gave birth to a healthy baby girl, Liv, in honor of Super Bowl L-I-V unintentionally. But thank you, Mitch, for helping make that. Because if the Chiefs would have lost L-I-V, might have done a name change. I don't know. Yeah. So appreciate you.
Yeah, no, that's a cool little story.
Yeah, I did not know that either. That's fantastic. How, don't give the date away, but like, was it really like right after the parade? Because all that feels like a blur to me. That postseason run.
Yeah, I can't remember all the exact dates, but it was before February 21st. Wow. So
yeah, so yeah. I mean, it was
like right after.
It was that's
yeah, it was a really cool story, and just the first Super Bowl ever. In my lifetime, rather, for the Chiefs. And, dude, I was over the moon. I'm sure, Mitch, you were – I couldn't even imagine being a player winning it. A fan is one thing, and we're over the moon, but a player. I mean, it has to be a totally different experience, well, man. So
I came from Cleveland where that wasn't really on the table. And whether it's good or not, I kind of learned to separate my play from team play to an extent. You know, I got there, and Joe Thomas is – you know, flew into the Hall of Fame, first ballot Hall of Famer. And he was, you know, the best left tackle in football every single year. And it just like did not matter. You know, we had a pretty good O-line a few years there. At the end of the day, it didn't really matter a ton. So you kind of create this little compartmentalization process where, you know, you want to do your best to win the game, but you can only do so much. You know, obviously the quarterback has the most impact, and then the guys that touch the ball, all those things. So, you know, we're just one piece of a five-man unit of one side of the football. And so, again, you want to win. That's like the goal, all those things. But you also realize, like, I can only do my job the best I can. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't really something that I like strained for or like a personal goal, those types of things. So just like,
yeah,
obviously coming to Kansas City, a part of that was, you know, great team, great organization. Would like to go to the playoffs, you know, feel what that's like. Alex was the quarterback at the time and, you know, team was doing well. And so the Super Bowl was just like, man, it would be cool if that happened, but it wasn't something that like I can necessarily do myself. And so I didn't realize till after the fact how awesome it is. Turns out it's pretty cool. And, you know, also what I tell people, and, you know, I've had, you know, friends with other teams and they're maybe at the end of their career done a Super Bowl, figuring out, should I go ring chase or should I not? Mm. And I was like, this specific Super Bowl is like so different than pretty much any other Super Bowl out there. Like it ties me to the city in a way that most other Super Bowls are not going to tie individuals to cities. You know, now if like the next one Buffalo wins, it's going to be the same thing for them. But like for us, you know, 50 years to the year of the last one, 60th year, I think of the team, 100th year of the NFL, like all these, you know, kind of cool round numbers and just like how starved is, to your point, yeah, the city was and like, yeah, how awesome it is that obviously the team has won a couple more since. And it's still like, you know, that first one is the one that everyone remembers because it was the one they share with their family or they wish their dad was here for, those types of things. So I got lucky that the one I got to win also was one that like is so important to the city. And then obviously I'm living here long term. So it's kind of this cool relationship.
Heck yeah. Just so you know, guys, we are going to go over some stuff with training camp, battles, yep, we're watching, most recent updates. We will get into more of that here down the road, but this was pretty cool. It's our first time really interacting, all three of us as well, aside from like some meetings prior to this. But I kind of withheld some Chiefs talk just because I wanted to be able to chat with you guys live. So it's Super Bowl 54. I remember that, and it's just like, okay, if they never win again, it was all worth it. And mm-hmm. Here you go, they won two more, and they've been to five just in the Mahomes era.
Yep.
So it's very insane to even be able to make it the run that the Chiefs have been on, Mahomes has been on the last 7-8 years. Obviously, last year was a crazy, I don't know if you want to say wake-up call, just everything that went bad could have, mm-hmm, losing all the one-score games, the injuries out the wazoo, and then obviously Mahomes, that's with the playoffs on the line near that final drive or maybe at the beginning of the final drive, tearing ACL, LCL. Yep. But the man is back, the alien is running around doing his own option keeps during camp practice today. So it's been quite the journey. And yeah, feel free to weigh in and bounce back. Shout out to the card shop as well that you got the card from, Nate. So let's go.
Yeah.
You
go ahead.
I was just going to say, who wants to chat about what are we really supposed to be watching for just at these early, early camp practices? Because I will say this, you talked about it, Nate. The wide receivers had some miscues, some errors, drops yesterday. And I have kind of seen the gambit of emotions of, you know, see, told you, wide receiver room's cooked. Just they're all over the place. Obviously, it's a better day two.
Yep.
But when you're going to camp, Mitch, you could weigh in on this. There's got to be an element of rust being knocked off, I would assume. And I don't know if it's just a different vibe with like a crowd too. You're at camp, people cheering you on. I don't know if there's any jitters associated with that or not. It's normally hot as hell, but it's been cool the last couple of days-ish, I think.
It actually has been – it was actually hotter for the rookies than it's been for the veterans the past 2 days. But it's still like you got to get your body acclimated to just going at that tempo. I think that's the thing that I have to remind myself, and even for fans, is like training camp is usually at a much faster tempo than OTAs and – mandatory minicamp. So there might be some element of that too with players, but yeah, there's it feels like there's so much to watch that it's easy to like get lost in like all of it versus like, okay, what am I prioritizing? What should be prioritizing? And like, what's actually going to matter, say July 30th compared to like the lead up to September 14th and beyond.
Yeah. I mean, I could take this in a lot of different ways, but I think early on, you know, you're kind of getting to your point, the speed of it down, kind of accustomed to being out there, as dumb as it sounds, just like getting in and out of the huddle, getting lined up, seeing a defense lining up against you. Yeah. You know, these are all things you did 7 or 8 weeks ago in OTAs, but it is different when it's training camp. There's a different feel. I don't think, you know, the fans being there had the biggest impact when I'm lining up against, you know, Justin Houston or D Ford or whoever. You know, that's a little more motivation than I need from other people. I will say, and I'll tell a little story on it later, just in terms of all the people filming and you basically feel like you can see pretty much any play that you want. That I think is one of the bigger differences. Like, I don't know that there's a fear of failure, but it's just like, man, if I kind of screw up any bad play, seems like it's going to be online and you're kind of going to get dragged. And so I think that's where I'm going with this, is like, there's what we see now as fans, and whether you're there in Nate's case or whether you're kind of seeing stuff online, it's really just the execution. Did a guy catch the ball? Did a guy get open? Did a guy, you know, beat a pass rusher? Did a guy get free? We're not, you know, privy to one, what they're working on, what the install was, all the different things you're really, you know, trying to get into. You know, certain coaches are more vocal. So if guys are not getting a line correctly or they're not executing the assignment correctly, you'll hear it from those coaches more than you would be able to know from just watching it. So probably 85% of these first few days is really just like, they get the play down, line up in the right spot, you know, be quick, be on time, get off on the snap count. And then the 15% is like, make sure you execute the play to the best of your ability. But again, we're still, what, 3 or 4 days removed from even getting in pads. And so the trajectory of camp changes just drastically once pads come on.
Yes.
So everything we're looking at now is just like, are they getting lined up? Does the operation look good? Does it look quick? And then the other part of it, which you guys mentioned, the speed, and I mentioned earlier, you can work out so much in the off season and it does not matter once you step on that field. For whatever reason, there's nothing like football shape, and playing football, practicing is the only way to get in football shape. Even if you're out there, well, the receivers probably have to run like 8 miles to get the volume of Coach Reed practice, but for the rest of us, even if I'm out there doing, you know, a 2 or 3 hour workout and I'm pushing myself, like, it just isn't the same as being on a field, doing the drills, going against other guys. So there's an element of really finding your feet and finding your wind and figuring out how to kind of navigate the soreness early on. So we're seeing all that at the same time. And yeah, like I said, unfortunately from the fan perspective, you're just kind of looking at execution when the majority of the first week of camp is just, you know, so much more important than really the result of the play.
It was interesting, Nate, I don't know if it was you, but somebody asked Creed Humphrey, I believe it was today, all the practices are already blending. It's only been 2 days. But just about they're basically saying, hey, what is the main emphasis for you guys in the trenches without the pads on? And Creed immediately said communication pre and post snap.
Yes. It's so fascinating because, you know, to Mitch's point, we're looking at, okay, was there like a free blitzer? Was there someone who like completely stumbled and like, oh, it's always funny, like these practices where it's like, okay, they're under center, it's a handoff. Was that a draw? Was that what was that? Was that off tackle? Like, it just looks like a hot mess because one guy may have stepped the wrong way or they may have taken like the wrong angle. And Mitch knows this based on where we as reporters are. It's, you know, we're up a hill, so we have a little bit of a vantage point of like seeing it above, but you're still like at a pretty wide distance. It's the same for fans.
You have a vantage point from 80 yards away.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we have to have those big zoomed in cameras. But like your angle is, my angle is different from like most fans. Fans could be at more eye level or slightly above eye level, and even they are at a distance. So it's like you talk to coaches, whether it's at the podium or off to the side or wherever, and you're like, that practice field looks so different compared to like, oh, that's what happened. Like I go through that all the time where I'm like, I have to double check not only my notes, but like, man, can I just pull this person from the video team over? Like, you know, like, hey, you come over here. Like, what really happened? And I really do that during the pad portion of practice when they put the pads on. And I'm like, I really want to see the one-on-ones up close. But it's funny, like, it's easy to see if a receiver is on time in the right spot and has read the coverage. And so, been doing this a while. To yesterday's point, it's like, okay, Rashee Rice did not participate in the 7-on-7 and the team portion of practice because he's still, you know, doing the ramp up and the rehab, which is all by design with the training staff and coach Andy Reid explained that to us. And so, okay, you still got Tyquan, you still got Xavier Worthy, but like, hey, this is our first time seeing Mahomes in 11-on-11 work. So it's just easy to see whether or not he and his receivers have good communication, good chemistry. Like, is the ball being placed in the right spot? Are you executing to Mitch's point? Not really great yesterday. Just not great at all. And so it's an easy thing to identify to, I think, most fans, obviously to someone who's covered the team for a while, and just to give people an idea of like, this was, and you always want to say like, this is just a snapshot. This is a snapshot of day one at camp. The most interesting thing about day one at camp is they're still dropping the ball. The second year receiver, Jalen Royals, is in the area, but like not in the right spot. And like, that's probably more on you than it is the quarterback, just to be fair, right? And it's fascinating to know that like, oh, the one guy who did stand out just happens to be rookie Cyrus Allen. Now it's one day, but maybe that's a positive sign for his development. And it's probably a negative sign that like, all right, man, like for Tyquan Thornton, you want to be more than just a deep threat. Well, catch the ball. Like it's hard, but yeah, there's jitters, there's conditioning, there's tempo, there's all these things. So you're just trying to give people an idea, but it's a lot easier to see the skill position guys right now than within the trenches. And Mitch knows this, like, it's going to be a while until we even get to like 9-on-7 to where you really see like, okay, what is the Chiefs run game, or at least what they're willing to show us someday in August. But it's a lot of fun for people to be like, see, I told you, should have got another receiver. And it's not my job, but it's like, it's just to capture day one, guys. That's all we have. We don't have the entire training camp to look forward to. So I understand the thrill of it all, but you're trying to contextualize things as they happen. And that's what makes camp really fun, because it can shift little by little as you go along.
Now I want to put this back in Mitch's court in a second, but you also asked Clark Hunt today in his presser, mm-hmm. I think specifically about salary cap, because the mm-hmm. Chiefs have about $4 million in salary cap space. And it was like kind of the offseason plan, but it seemed like part of the point you were asking is like, hey, if you need to make more moves, can you, even though you technically don't really have money? And I thought it was interesting. Clark Hunt said, yeah, essentially, like if injuries hit the room mm-hmm. or if they find weaknesses, which you could, maybe Mitch can tell us where he thinks they should add, but he made it seem like they could. Will they? I don't know.
Right.
But we'll have to wait and see. I know they saved $20 million by letting go of Juwan. They already moved that, but I'm segueing into O-line stuff just for a second here, Mitch, before a camp story. When you're looking at the O-line battle, specifically at the right tackle spot, you're rotating through Jalen Moore. Today it was Khalil Benson, the undrafted free agent out of Indiana. Tomorrow it could be Esau Pole. They're kind of rotating guys.
Yeah.
This early on, Mitch, how serious are you taking that? What are you reading into this? I know you saw a clip of Khalil Benson against, I think, R. Mason Thomas.
Yep.
The initial comment was maybe like, I think Khalil Benson lost this rep, and you shared a meme or a gif like, are you sure about that? So yeah, what are your thoughts over there on that side of the ball?
I'll let the tweet speak for itself on how I felt about the analysis.
Aside from that one rep, but just kind of in general.
No, I know. So I do think the fact that they're rotating the starters this early is interesting. And the fact that, you know, I guess Nate said there's only two 11-on-11 periods, but that he would get the whole day to kind of be with the ones. One thing with Coach Reed and his practices early on in training camp, it is very much stacked that the ones do more reps than everybody else. I was only in one other place, but in 4 years I had three different coaches, so I was experienced with some different training camp rep algorithms there. And usually you would split reps evenly, ones, twos, threes early in camp, and then once you get closer to the season and once, you know, the depth charts kind of start making a little bit more sense, then the ones start getting more reps and all those things. Well, Coach Reed, he starts out, you know, like 8-6-3 or whatever it is really early. So to give, you know, a young guy, an undrafted guy, all the reps on the second day, I think does say something. But I have seen guys who look great in OTAs, and they make their way up the depth chart by the time training camp rolls around, and they still continue to look pretty good. And, you know, by the time the first preseason game rolls around and right after that, they're back to third on the depth chart because things just change so much in the offensive line room, in the defensive line room, once the pads go on, and then once you get that first game. And you can really see, you know, is this guy competitive? Does he have, you know, the toughness mentally and physically? And is he going to be someone that we can rely on? So I don't take really any offensive line depth chart stuff that serious until after the first preseason game because, I mean, Andrew Wiley, great example of that. He was third string his entire, whatever, first 2 weeks or so of training camp. And he went out there and he got, you know, the third string reps with the team during the preseason game. And he did awesome. And not only played well, but, like, finished competitive, like, was having fun out there. And all of a sudden, like, that next week, he was with the twos and he started getting, you know, dabbling in some one reps and mixing in there. And all of a sudden went from, like, you know, the 13th alignment to, man, this might be our sixth or seventh alignment. We need to start getting him reps all across the board. So, you know, that's an example of, again, me not really caring a ton until after that first preseason game, because what precedes that now is, you know, only a week or maybe, you know, 8 to 9, 10 days of padded practice before the first game. And then you really do get to see, like, can a guy apply everything he's learned so far into a game? And you're not going in there with, like, a full game plan. You're not, you know, doing all those things. So it's just like, can you take base installs? Can you show me that you worked on this stuff for the past 14 days? And can you go, you know, execute against opponents? And then also, you know, are you going to be competitively tough? Are you going to try to finish? Are you going to, you know, do all the things we want to see in offensive linemen, especially for, you know, second and third stringers who are trying to make the team? So, yeah, very interesting that they're rotating early, but also, you know, it is what it is until pads come on. It's just not that important in the grand scheme of things.
Here's a question for you guys, since we're just on the subject. National perception of the O-line was, like, almost to some people, mayday in the offseason before the draft. Pick 9, got to take a tackle. Instead, the Chiefs, they not only didn't take a tackle at all in the draft, which I thought maybe they would if the right guy fell potentially, but probably not pick 9. They didn't do that.
Seems like they got the guy they wanted undrafted.
That's true. Khalil. I was so excited when they signed him, but that's kind of what I'm getting at. They didn't grab anybody in the draft. They did get Benson right after the draft, but then they also, on top of that, I don't know if they're just high enough on what they have or there's something else behind the scenes we just don't know, but they traded away Wanye to the Falcons, and I was happy for him. I saw a clip today of him walking out onto the field and wish him well. But with that being said, Mitch, Nate, what's your concern level of the state of the O-line right now, running it back with the same primary four from left tackle to right guard, and then I think it's Jalen Moore, so right now as you're perceived to be starting right tackle. I mean, he's getting paid $18.8 or so million dollars this year to potentially do that. And so I guess this is a loaded question, but maybe Mitch could weigh in on this. Based on the film you watched and even what you've seen of Jalen Moore, very limited sample size at right tackle, how do you feel about that on that side of the ball for Mahomes?
I feel pretty good about it. I mean, if that's your worst offensive lineman, like, you're doing pretty good. I think the thing that's gotten lost in the entire shuffle is how well Kingsley played at left guard last year. You know, wasn't perfect and wasn't, you know, elite by any means, but from where he, you know, was that first year into, you know, everyone freaking out in training camp about him last year. And then all of a sudden, you know, we start playing real football and, you know, looks like a good player. And he's solid. Obviously, Creed and Trey are who they are. Josh, you know, when he's on the field playing, is fantastic. I think Nate said something like, you know, he's a wall. Like, he is fantastic. Yes. So my thing with Jalen is he played, I think, more left tackle in San Francisco, was signed to presumably be the left tackle, you know, didn't expect Josh to get there at 31 for us. And I think just, like, in terms of body movement, more comfortable on the left side. And so last year, he also took a ton of left side reps because all those OTAs, Josh was still recovering from the injury in college and, you know, wasn't full. And I think once training camp started, I don't know if they were really battling, but Jalen was more of, like, the backup left tackle and then kind of transitioned into swing tackle. So I don't think he got a ton of reps on the right side when he's not someone who is as comfortable doing it, because he had primarily played left tackle the past few years and then did it all off season while the guy who ended up playing was recovering. So I'm more optimistic that he's going to look better this year at right tackle, because that's what he's been primarily doing the entire year. And it's something I would say Kansas City maybe hasn't been the best at in the past 10 years is identifying which guys work better on which specific side. You know, we tend to have, well, we as offensive linemen tend to have, you know, a favorite side. It might be the side that you played most of your career. It might be the side just more comfortable. You know, there are very few guys that are just like as good on both sides as possible. And so if you're going to be a backup, you're probably going to have to, you know, do that. And if you're going to be a starter, you know, ideally you want the guy in the more comfortable position. So this was my thing when Josh got hurt. And I think we were going into the Houston game and they were saying that Wanya was going to be left tackle and Jalen was going to be right tackle.
Right. Yep.
And I was like, this, if this happens, this is like, to me, almost a form of coaching malpractice because you have two guys on the opposite sides of which side they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Wanya has always been better at right tackle, always been more comfortable there. And Jalen is clearly more comfortable at left tackle. So again, another example of maybe where I think, you know, they don't always do a great job of that. But the long answer is I'm more comfortable with Jalen this year. I think the other four guys, you know, speak for themselves, are at worst above average players, if not, you know, best of their position in some cases. And he's going to be an average or better right tackle. And again, that's your worst offensive lineman. That's a great spot to be in. I do think also the unit hasn't played as well together when, you know, at least four of them have been on the field as the individuals have been, you know, collectively over the, you know, last 4 or 5 years. We keep talking about the run game and why can't we run the ball? It's like, man, we had Tooney, Creed, and Trey in the middle basically playing all the time for like the last 3 years and couldn't run the ball, and then replaced Tooney with Kingsley, who played pretty well and is bigger and stronger and still couldn't really run the ball. You know, tackles have, you know, kind of been hit or miss a little bit, but in general, I feel like we've been more individual parts than some of the part on the offensive line. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, obviously the sum of the parts looks better than the individuals, because the individuals are all pretty good.
And that's why training camp matters, because you start to build that continuity and that relationship right now, especially when the pads come on. So to Mitch's point, like, I would think we would see Jalen Moore taking most of the first team reps when the pads come on, so that you understand what you and your teammates are doing in terms of the pre and you know, post snap communication. One of the best moments of last year, and you touched on this a little bit ago, Mitch, is one guy that I had circled last year so that I could watch him every day was Kingsley Suamataia, because it was very clear that, like, okay, they're moving you to left guard. They are going to give you every opportunity to see if you can do it. You know, he had played tackle all the way throughout his college career. Chiefs thought he was athletic enough to be at left tackle. We saw what happened. Now you got to learn a new position and be ready for it. And there were times where I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, but the problem was, Cole, that other guy is Chris Jones. Like, you're not going to see that. Like, you're just not going to see that the rest of the year. And so this is where coaching experience comes into play, where like Andy Heck and Andy Heck's the offensive line coach, Andy Reid, the head coach, would say, hey, it's just going to take time. Like, you just want to slowly get better. You know, obviously coach speak, don't make the same mistake twice, limit your mistakes. You know, we've talked about this, I think, for each of us in various conversations about, like, hey, you just want to die a slow death, give Patrick Mahomes that extra half second. And yeah, and then they played in the preseason and it was like, oh, that's right, the Arizona Cardinals don't have Chris Jones. That's cool. Oh, the Seattle Seahawks, which we knew, pretty good team. Yeah. That was honestly like one of his best performances in the preseason, where it was like, oh, okay. Like, we know he has NFL talent, but this should work out. And he got better over the course of the year. And we saw these moments in training camp where it was a little touch and go. But young players are supposed to grow.
That's what camp's for.
Yeah, exactly. Players are supposed to grow over the course of the season, over the course of training camp. And so he's always been a really good example about, now you translate that to Jalen Moore, who's been in the league longer and given a whole offseason to be prepared and fully ready to go. Okay, let's see how he does in the preseason, knowing he's most likely the fully entrenched starter, unless something, you know, crazy happens. But to Khalil Benson, like, keep going. Like, see how far you can push the veteran. See how much you can make, you know, a wave or two in the postseason, or excuse me, the preseason. Because when you're an undrafted guy, there's about one or two every year that make the roster. And those are always fantastic moments because, man, you had to climb a mountain to make it on an NFL roster. And if you make it on the NFL roster as a second string tackle, you're going to be dressing on Sunday. Like, he will, you know, we project this out. Like, you could be making your NFL debut on Monday Night Football in Arrowhead Stadium against the Denver Broncos. Like, that would be pretty wild.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I will say, I've got two O-line things real quick.
Yeah.
One is that I still haven't figured out why, but in practice, defensive line bull rushes are like 25 to 30% minimum stronger than what you see in games. I don't really know why. I don't quite get it. I've talked to some veteran guys too. Like, they agree on the defensive line side. Like, bull rush is just stronger in practice than it is in a game. So if you see guys getting pushed back a little bit, that's not like terrible.
Right.
Just have it in your head that, like, maybe it's going to be a little bit better once the games come. Still haven't figured that out. Number two. You guys will learn, if you don't already know, I'm a tackle elitist, and the Kingsley situation is a great example of guy doesn't work at tackle, we'll kick him inside a guard, he can be pretty good. You will never hear a story of a guy failing a guard that we kick out to tackle, because we think maybe he'll be better out there. So I just want to, you know, put that on the board so everyone who's new here, tackle elitist. We can continue.
Said by future Rig of Honor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they better have OT on there, not just OL.
I will say, out of all the players I look at last year, and just as bad as the season was, I think that was one of the biggest bright spots for me was Kingsley, how far he came along. Because it was even in preseason and maybe very early on in the season, he lost a couple snaps this fast. And I know Mahomes in the back of his mind was saying, oh, cuss word, because he has to bail like instantly. But he came such a long way. Quick, like, just in that one season.
Well, my thing
very,
was
very happy for him.
Everyone forgot about week 18 the year before against Denver, against, you know, Zach Allen and like all those guys.
It
he played
well.
Pretty well, and he came into the year being a left tackle and was a backup left tackle for most of the year, and then just like they threw him to left guard and he played pretty well against Denver. Held up physically, like, yeah, wasn't all perfect. Had a couple plays where he got, you know, bowled back and got beat, but like, that was the more important thing than anything we're seeing in training camp. Like, we saw him against one of the best defenses, one of the best defensive tackles, one of the best defensive lines in game action when it mattered, and he played well. So let's just wait to see what game action looks like once things get going.
And for the Jalen Moore of it all, I don't want anybody to forget that his wife, interestingly enough, was giving birth to their kid. I believe it was their daughter. And hey, man, you ready to play today? We might need you at left tackle in prime time against the Lions. You know that Hutchinson guy. We might need you to protect, and played well when he wasn't even getting first team reps all of practice. Right. The understanding was, hey, I'm always ready. I'm a professional. I'm a veteran. I know what it takes. But it's one thing to get yourself mentally ready. It's another thing to be like, okay, plans changed. Can you play tonight and like play well? The best part was he was sleeping in a hospital bed. So in a lot of ways, kind of like training camp.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, that story is insane. He was up all night because
with
his kid was born. He played it really well. That's really one of the craziest stories of last year. And we got a couple more things we're going to get into. Mitch, we still have a camp story, but I have some other just battles going on around the roster that I'd love to ask you about, Nate. But before we do, I do want to shout out the sponsor, season-long sponsor, partner of the channel. It's a big reason why Chiefs Collective is able to do what they do, and I'm honored to be here with all of you guys. But it's Prize Picks. This is the number one sports picks app in America. Super easy to use on the app. You can also use it online. You can do player picks, just choose more or less on a few player stats, which I did here. You can also just straight up pick teams. You could have who you want to win, the spread, total, any of that. And then you just got to use code HMA. New users play $5, get $150 if you win. This is an example of something I did today. I don't know if these are going to hit, but Puka Nacua, I hit more than 7.5 receiving touchdowns by season's end in the regular season. And then JSN is the one I'm not sure about, but I'm just believing in the hype. 1,700 yards last year. I went with more than 1,324 and a half yards. This is just one example of many you can do. These are obviously future picks, but they got UFC, all kinds of stuff on there. I'm a big UFC guy. But again, use code HMA and new users can play five, get 150 if you win. Thanks again, Prize Picks, for sponsoring the entire show.
Yeah. Is that a,
Cyrus Allen features on there? Chiefs fans can hammer that over.
Yeah, right now, bang it. Also,
you want Cole, Cyrus? Yeah,
Cole did. Was that JSN pick? Is that a little Kenneth Walker related? You know, they remove a skill guy there, and you're just like, they're just gonna throw the ball to one of the best receivers in the league.
That is kind of my mindset of like, if you got 1,700 yards last year with the running back duo that they had,
so wild.
I would assume you could get 1,300 with one of them gone. That was kind of my mindset there.
Not so bad. I see it. I see the vision.
We'll see. I thought about hitting Rashee Rice's more than 1,500, but no, I'm just kidding.
I was gonna advise you to not do that until we got to see it. You know.
Well, let's talk wide receiver room, and then I think at this point we're saving a Mitch Camp story till the end. This is not planned. I think it's supposed to be like first. We're just dragging the viewers along. I want to hear this Camp story. But since we're talking about the wide receiver room,
yeah,
I'd just be curious to know how you're feeling, either of you and both of you, how you're feeling about the state of the wide receiver room, given the fact that when you look at the offense, they didn't really change much about the wide receiver room, didn't really change much about the tight end room either. You didn't change much about the O-line. You massively upgraded the running back room. But yeah, how are you feeling about the state of the wide receiver room as it sits right now, given who's there and around?
Let me scare everyone so that Mitch can save all of us.
Okay.
I think Nate cracked his knuckles leading into this, FYI. So buckle up.
I think Tyquan Thornton can have a very good season. I have made the argument so much that he should have been playing more often, that he was a legitimate threat, that they really found something between him and Mahomes as like a secondary deep option to the primary deep guy, which was supposed to be Xavier Worthy. We all know Xavier Worthy wasn't healthy last season. So if there's a guy that's supposed to like really take off, my price pick would be Xavier Worthy. Like whatever his baseline is, I would take the over because, and this is traditionally historic to Andy Reid, like receivers really do have a third year leap. If they're in the, you know, ideal circumstance, not injury, obviously have a lot of playing time, you're playing with the great quarterback. So that has usually been the case. Yeah, go ahead.
624 and a half yards is Worthy's line.
That is disrespectful.
You'll be hitting more?
Yeah. Okay. And honestly, they need more than that from him. I keep writing it every year. They can't keep putting everything on Travis Kelce. They have continued to put everything on Travis Kelce. So I think Rashee Rice is the biggest wild card because of the knee injury, because of the contract year. You know, he is still, you could argue, their most talented receiver. But again, I don't know how much he's going to do in training camp, which is understandable because you want to get him as healthy for the Broncos. But Chad O'Shea going to have to work miracles, guys. Miracles. Or maybe Cyrus Allen is that guy. And, you know, I don't know exactly, and I need to get to the bottom of this, if this keeps trending, like who was the guy that really identified Cyrus Allen and was a part of like the JAF process of like, okay, I'm bringing this to the table. We should take a, you know, take a bit of a gamble on a guy in the fifth round who doesn't have the most elite traits, but is just a very good football player. So,
okay, I'm afraid because you just said no, Chad O'Shea is going to have to work miracles. So Mitch, what say you?
My thing is, I don't think that they're relying on Travis to be the guy. I think they're very aware of what he is at this point, who he is. He's not going to be, you know, the true featured guy in an offense. He's not going to be the guy who's defeating double coverage, all those things. Rashee is a fantastic receiver against zone coverage. His stats against man coverage are pretty abysmal. I do think Xavier is in part the man coverage beater. Now you need to scheme in a little bit of help where he's off the ball, he's in motion, you know, he's maybe behind the bunch of the point. Yep. We saw that clip of the cover zero play where he shakes the guy at the line and just burns him. Like, that's what he's there for. Man coverage, he shakes, he gets loose. You know, he should have the speed to defeat you. Thornton, I think, is an upgrade over Hollywood Brown. Even if we don't believe, you know, with a larger volume that the stats will still look as good. I think overall it was clear that he and Pat had a great on-field relationship, and he would go get the ball in a way that the other receivers didn't get the ball. Which is how I'll leave that. And
no, you can say he was their best contested catch receiver last year.
Oh,
and he
like, was by far.
He's on the field 33% of the time.
So that's always been the thing with Tyreek that's been by far the most underrated part of his game. Route running is number two, but the contested catch ability and his ability to go up and get the ball, incredibly underrated. And we just haven't seen that from Xavier. Now, I know there's, again, the clip either from today or yesterday where he's up along the sideline and kind of like fades out of bounds. I don't know receiver play enough. That's kind of a weird, you know, the video from the stands. Can't see all the angles.
You can't see the angles.
Could it be catchable in bounds?
Right.
But he has shown that he's not going to be as aggressive at the catch point. And so I feel good enough about this team in zone coverage. Travis doesn't run normal routes, so in zone, he will find the open space. Pat will find him. She's great in zone coverage. X needs to stay healthy, and Tyquan, you know, needs to be on the field more because he has got a good relationship with Pat. And those are your two, I think, man coverage beaters. And that's what happened last year when the third play of the game, Xavier gets exploded by Travis. You know, when Trav kind of runs the wrong route there, his shoulder was hurt, and I think at some point he hurt a lower extremity, whether it was
I think it was his right ankle. So think about it. He looked messed up on both sides.
Well, so that's my thing is everyone said like, oh, we had the shoulder injury, all that stuff. I'm like, he had a lower body injury and he was supposed to be fast and explosive. And he was not that last year. So like, 5'10", 170 with a bum ankle doesn't play in the NFL. Like, that's not great. That plays when you're running 4.2. So if he can stay somewhat healthy, which again, I know is a knock on him, he's slight framed and is he going to stay healthy? All those things, that's your man coverage answer. And I think we saw that in the first game last year too. You know, I think the second play of the game was gadget play for X. The third play was supposed to be, you know, a crossing pattern and supposed to kind of Travis picks his guy and he gets free. Like a lot was designed for him in the pass game as kind of a gadget guy, that Tyreek piece to be able to do it all. And that got taken from the entire offense the third play of the game because of that injury. And then, you know, further on with the ankle injury to Nate's point. So, I still think there's room for optimism. But there's not that much room for injury. There's not that much room for deterioration of the room. You know, I think once you start getting 5th, 6th, 7th down the depth chart, which again, any receiver room's not going to be that great once you get that far. But we've seen in the past when Pat loses one or two guys that he trusts and more guys get in there and they don't run routes and they don't see football the same way he does.
Exact same way,
It's a huge issue.
He's going to Kelsey. That's what's going to happen. And I think that's where I'm at with it. I feel decent about the top three guys in the wide receiver room, especially with the run game and stuff you could do. But yes, it's the depth. It's if an injury happens. There's just nobody proven, and I'm not saying like that's why I'm just kind of hoping whatever hype we're throwing on Cyrus Allen that we've thrown on other guys every year. I don't care. Name it. Name a guy. Name Justin Ross. Name anybody. Name anybody. I am hoping the hype is semi real. Maybe not out the gate, but like Worthy, back half of their rookie year, they start integrating in a bit more. Or if injuries hit the room, because if it's not Allen, I guess it could be Royals, and then you kind of know what you have in Nico if he's number six as the punt returner.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the depth is the big question for me at this point in time.
No better opportunity for Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice than right now.
We have 10-ish minutes. Do we want to touch on just opposite side of the ball and how the CB room is looking initially, or is that too in-depth of a discussion before we get into a Mitch story or two with camp?
Let me give a quick glimpse or snapshot of the depth chart right now, because Xavier Worthy, you know, is a guy that I like to look at because of the speed that Mitch mentioned. And how does that look for the other guy? So the DB he burned today was Kader Kohou, who's coming off his own knee injury. So take that for what it may be. But it was against cover zero, and he's supposed to win that rep. With Legarius Sneed not doing team-related stuff or seven-on-seven, I think it's by default, really quick, Mansoor Delaney, the top pick, Noah Williams, who's had a very good 2 days, Christian Roland Wallace is your nickel as of right now, and then I would say the fourth guy is probably, again, by default, Christian Fulton, who did have a really nice back of the hat, back end of last season, like the last 4 or 5 games when he got his knee right. So,
wait, brief interlude. We're expecting anything out of Legarius this year?
Until I see him, I don't know. I mean,
I'm saying, like, because you kind of couch that with, like, when he's back on the field, then this, like, differs. But I don't know. I'm going into the year expecting nothing out of him. And if we get anything positive, and if he can even be healthy into, you know, December later in the year, that's a bonus. But I think to put any sort of expectations on his ability to be on the field, and let alone to be, you know, near where he was the last time we saw him on the field,
right?
I think that would be doing a huge disservice, honestly, to him to even, you know, expect that.
Well, we'll see if he's out there at any point during training camp.
I mean, it seems like Knowles had a couple good days. He's kind of going to be one of your main guys. We'll see about Delaney. That's the thought. 6th overall pick. Yeah, he tweaked his shoulder during OTAs. He's got the yellow no contact jersey. But do you think, is he supposed to be shedding that soon-ish? Have you gotten any clarity that you are allowed to share, or is it still vague about it a little bit?
It's very vague.
The Chiefs are awesome with injuries. They share all, and they're really open about timelines. So why wouldn't they know?
Or if they give you a timeline, you're like, huh, you gave me one. What does that say?
Yeah, so we're not going to. When he puts a red jersey on, we'll see it, and someone will tweet about it.
You just don't want him to miss preseason games would be my thing. As a rookie, you would like to see him out there on the in a preseason game. And I guess as of right now, because he doesn't have a non-contact jersey off, he wouldn't technically be allowed to play against, like, the, you know, the Los Angeles Rams in week 1 of the preseason. Yeah. So I guess concern would come if he's not available for the first preseason game.
Did they sign him, talking about Sneed, around the time Delaney got banged up? Like, does the timeline...
It's a couple weeks after. Yeah, that's a good question. It's a couple weeks after, Cole, because we realized he wasn't participating for mandatory minicamp, and then, like, literally the next day they signed Sneed. So it's like, all right, well, I mean, cool. Let's do it. But yeah, is Sneed going to play safety? I don't know. Is he going to play cornerback? I don't know. Is he going to be nickel? Who knows? We'll only find out when they allow him to be on the practice field.
I kind of see what Mitch is saying, though, because you could bring Sneed in and load manage the knee as some insurance for a guy that can plug and play, and some kind of, like, I think of Spags talking about today, Chamari Connor in the slot. He's going to be at safety. So for Sneed, he's going to be on the sideline, but in a pinch. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Sneed.
No.
Like, I love Legarius Sneed, what he did for this team during that run. And if that knee holds up, great. But if he's just there as, hey, we're in a pinch, we need you out there, that makes a lot of sense, especially with Christian Fulton having some recent injury history concerns last year as well.
Yeah. You guys thought Sneed held too much when he was at his physical peak.
Oh, yeah.
Just wait for it. Gonna get those mittens back on.
you, me, at least 5 yards.
I feel like we've covered the biggest questions. It's right tackle, slot corner. We talked wide receiver room. We know what the running back room in theory can potentially open up for this offense. That's probably a convo for another day. We could dive into it more in depth. But Mitch, you've been at how many Andy Reid training camps at St. Joe? Is it 5, 6?
It's 4, 5. Yeah, 5.
Okay, 5. You got some stories. I think there's some you can't share. That's fine. But what can you share that would just be... What's a story that comes to mind that it could be a practice, it could be not? What do you got?
Yeah, I got two. They're not, you know, the most extensive stories, but to Nate's point earlier that I shushed him on, the biggest thing about St. Joe is actually that the rooms are, like, frigid, freezing.
That's right. That's right.
Like,
that's right.
52 degrees. I don't know what temperature they go at. My guess is just whatever temperature coach likes, and he seems to like it cold. But that's one of the things that you legitimately get so cold that the only two things, well, three things that I would bring to training camp are extra blankets. I would bring an alarm clock that I could set up so that like I had to get up out of bed to turn it off, which I always told the young guys, like, bring an alarm clock that forces you to get up out of bed. And then I would bring a mattress topper. I learned that in my last couple of years because you had, like, I don't know if they're twin or full beds, but it's one quote unquote king size bed, but it's two little ones pushed together. So there's a seam in the middle. Well, turns out when you're 320 plus pounds, that seam in the middle is not the most comfortable. So what I would do is I would buy a mattress topper just for the single bed and basically sleep on just like one side of it. I'd kind of use the other half to like put my computer and other stuff. And but yeah, like if the rooms were the other way and they were too hot, it'd be miserable. So at least they're cold. They're big man friendly. Not much else there is big man friendly. It is interesting. Like the more you learn about sleep science and stuff, like, maybe we should get some better beds. And but like for me, I was always so stressed about camp that I wouldn't have slept well kind of regardless. And once you put like a decent mattress topper on anything, it's comfortable enough. But yeah, so the rooms are really cold. So if you ever see guys, you know, in those videos of them rolling up to the room, if they got like blankets or pillows or extra things, like it's probably because those rooms are really cold. But one of my favorite like smaller stories, I know we're running out of time here, is my very first play of 11 on 11, which I think back then we used to do the conditioning test in the morning. So we would show up like the day before. You could only do administrative meetings. So you had the worst 3-hour, 4-hour meeting that night before. Couldn't do any football. We would do our conditioning test in the morning, and then we would do a 10-10-10 in the afternoon, which is kind of an easier practice, just wearing helmets. You know, it's still the acclimatization period, whatever that is.
Acclimatization.
Yeah, I can never say that word. And
acclimation.
Literally, no, it's not. It's more than acclimation. That's why I always get messed up. It's like acclimatization. It's very
Okay.
I don't know if that's some weird like football term that everyone wants to sound smart they put on the thing, but the very first play of 11-on-11, and this is also not ones versus ones. It's like ones versus scout team. I mean, technically scout team, it's the twos. Right as I go to punch, my back ankle like catches grass and it kind of like twists and rolls. And so it gives the appearance that I just get like steamrolled and just completely put on my back. Like very first play, you know, I'm a free agent signing. Everyone's all excited and stuff. And I mentioned this earlier, like it doesn't seem like anyone filmed it or like this wasn't the era of like film everything and show everyone's worst play on Twitter. And look at this, our new signing absolutely sucks. He got thrown on his butt. But that's like, again, a good example of like sometimes we see stuff and it's just there's nothing more than a guy slipped or something weird happened. Like that was my very first play. It was as embarrassing of a play as I really ever had in practice in my career. Funny enough, like the first time in college I had a one-on-one against one of our linebackers, he trucked me too. So maybe there's just something in those waters. But yeah, we can get into some other camp stories in other days when we got more time. But I'll have to filter through those and see what's tellable on the old live stream.
I'll be super vague, but we did have a coach last year tell a camp story that definitely was wild and got taken down. So yeah, thanks for being selective. I will say this about the mattress thing. I'm surprised players aren't bringing one of those boxed mattresses, like a Bear mattress or something that just comes in a box and you just unbox and it inflates essentially. Just throw it on in your room, get a real mattress.
I think my last year they had some sort of like rent a bed kind of thing. Yeah, you could like upgrade your bed if you wanted.
Rent a center.
And I'm too cheap for that. So my mattress topper thing worked well anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like, don't you want us to play well? Like just the NFL's partner with Sleep Number, like get us hooked up for camp or something.
Hey Mitch, that's why all the other teams don't go to St. Joseph, Missouri and Missouri Western.
Well, if Dallas goes to Oxnard, I guarantee Jerry is.
Oh, well, Jerry Jones is in a different category.
some feather. That is the one thing you hear stories, and everyone, as much as we want to, you know, kind of crap on them from the outside, like everyone who plays there loves it. Jerry, like, is very accommodating, very player friendly.
Top of the line.
Like,
yeah.
He does it great for them.
Yeah. I think there are years where everybody's like, it's not really like that. And I'm like, no, it is. It's really like that. Like,
it's so each room shares a bathroom too. So no one has their own bathroom.
Right.
Like, I think they gave Kenneth Walker, I think, Pat this year. So like, you know, you get out of meetings. the same time you go home and you got to figure out which guy uses the bathroom first, and you know how you want to do with you know, who brushes their teeth first and stuff. So it's interesting. It's, you know, kind of old school. I mean, that's Coach Reed's thing. He kind of does it on purpose. He wants you to go there. He wants there to be as few distractions as possible. He wants there to be bonding time. It's not supposed to be like we're in a miserable situation and all we have is each other, but like there's an element of removing things from the situation so that you can focus on, you know, football and your teammates. And obviously he's had a lot of success, especially early in the season. So he knows what he's doing. That's for sure.
Yep.
It's my last quick hitter question. Dead heat of summer, St. Joe, full pads, 100+ degrees. It's 100+ degrees out there, plus humidity, long drive drill. How tough is that as a player that's gone through it multiple times?
Long drive drill is the most overrated guys complaining about it drill.
Okay.
By far.
Really?
And it annoys the crap out of me that everyone complains about it all the time. First off, from an offensive line perspective, if the D-line plays it correctly and they don't sub guys out, they get more tired than we do.
Than you do, yeah, right.
So by the fifth or sixth play, they are way more gassed than you are. So there's point number one. Point number two, practice is over. Well, at least it was for us when we could start at 8. But practice is over now by 11:30. So you're not out there when it's 100. So you get out there and 9:05 is the latest you'll get out there. Look, and yeah, it might feel bad, but like it's not 100 and it's not a heat index of 116. And by the time that 11:30 practice is over, you have no more time that you need to be outdoors the rest of the day. Everything's inside. Everything's air conditioned. So, yeah, you can tell I'm a little fired up about that. Long drive drill, not a big deal. Yeah, it's not great. It's not exciting. But, like, also, one of the cool things about that is you actually get to move the ball. Like,
yeah, you go down the field.
It's scripted, so it's not like if you gain 30 yards, you do come back to, like, whatever the next, you know, second and four is supposed to be. But you get to move the ball a little bit. It feels a little more like real football. And if the D-line, you know, isn't scheming and they're not seven guys, they're more tired than you are, and it's super easy. So, yeah, I don't mind like long drive drill. Like, okay, we went to Jacksonville the first game of the year. It was 99 degrees playing at 1 o'clock. That's a real long drive drill. That sucks.
That sucks.
And then all of a sudden on third down, like Josh Allen comes in and he's your defensive end. Now he's fresh. Like, that's terrible. Doing it during training camp is just not that big of a deal. Guys always want something to complain about. Offensive linemen especially, so that's kind of the thing we latch on to, but no, not a big deal. We're gonna put that one to bed.
All right. I was not
or put that one to mattress angle. Topper.
I was not expecting
put it in the dorms.
Well, heck yeah.
Oh no, you'll see. I'm glad to complain about many of things, and I'm glad to jump on bandwagons of awfulness, but that's one that no, guys need to stop complaining about.
This is why I was excited to be on here with you guys, because Nate, the way you cover the team is super unique. And then Mitch, I really appreciate your honesty, but you will also go kind of respectfully, like back and forth with fans, explaining why you believe this play should be viewed this way versus how they're kind of saying it. Like even today, you did it kind of jokingly, tongue in cheek, about that lost rep that wasn't really a loss. But I've always appreciated that about you. Last story, you came at me one day and all I said, I think was technically Mahomes was a Dorsey pick. And I'm not trying to open this whole can of worms. I said, even though yes, Veach, I mean, there, I don't know if we'll ever know the complete weird dynamic there of Dorsey on the way out at the end of all that. But that's all I was saying. And, dude, next thing I know, Mitch is in my comments, like 200 likes and like, get him, Mitch, get him. I'm like, whoa. I was like, I'm not anti-Veach per se here. I was just saying, technically speaking, if you're crediting GMs. But
yes, right.
We know that he definitely helped find Mahomes, and I'm sure there's even more to it than we even know behind the scenes. But I do appreciate you. If you see something, Mitch, you'll be like, hey, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. Long drive drill? Hold on a second.
Yeah, you know, I try to not overdo it. I try to not be too much of a person that people are going to start hating on there. So I do my best to keep it cordial, and, you know, we'll try to keep going that way as, you know, Twitter keeps going downhill.
Well, we have plenty more that we'll be talking about each and every week. I believe just from a logistics standpoint for the viewers listening, appreciate everybody tuning in.
Yes.
Next Tuesday is the show, and it was supposed to be on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
We kind of pushed it back. We were going to announce it around the timing of the Eric Bieniemy news and felt really not good about that. I think all of us were in agreement of let's just hold and wait. And you know, on that note, like prayers out, thoughts, yes. like all that to Eric Bieniemy in that impossible situation that he's working through. But I'm glad Mia is now out of the ICU yes. and things are hopefully, at least in that regard, taking an upward, upward direction. So that's at least good. And then I'll ask you some Eric Bieniemy questions next week, Mitch, because I want to know some of the stuff he was yelling at you guys. And I know they're missing that right now.
Yeah.
But man, thanks everybody for tuning into the Chiefs Collective. Do you guys have any parting words before we get out of here?
Gonna check with whatever is the FCC, figure out what words I'm allowed to say next week if we're getting into those stories.
We'll check.
No, this is awesome. It's been a lot of fun. Look forward to doing this every week, and we'll see you next Tuesday and all the other Tuesdays to come.
Yeah, that's the hope, is every Tuesday. Yeah, Mitch just keeps teaching us the things that are real and the things that are perceived, and yeah, hopefully we'll be bringing you, you know, the news of it all along the way too. But hopefully you guys enjoy it, and it's only going to get better from here. The sad part is, I don't know how many times I can hold this card up, but I'm going to do it one more time.
We will be live.
I think instead of the rundown on the left side, we should just put that. That'll be the fourth pillar.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know.
Yeah, just, you know.
That's a great idea. Audio will go live tomorrow. We'll be live Tuesday night at 7 through camp, and I think maybe earlier on, but we'll announce that later. Thanks again, everybody, for hanging out. It was an honor to Nate Mitchell chat with you guys, talk some football. Make sure to hit the like button, sub if you're new, all that stuff that I'm really bad at doing, even though I do YouTube. But
don't you know how to do all this already?
I stopped asking for all that, and I'm just like, they don't want to hear like and sub. They just want the content. So
that's anyway, true.
Like, yeah, sub, true. All the stuff that I don't normally say, but appreciate y'all, and we'll see y'all next time.